in the secular world, and I don't know. I imagine I would count the number of briefings or presentations that I've made would be in the hundreds. It just became a way of life. But if you ask me, when I stand up to teach a Bible class or try to present a lesson like this morning, are you nervous? If I didn't answer with a resounding yes, I would not be telling the truth, because I realize the seriousness of what I'm about to do. That is, try to speak from God's word. We do have a number of visitors, and we're glad you're here. Oh, James, I've tried to turn it on. Well, it says it's on. No. It says it's on now. Right? Okay. All right. Maybe I'd back up a little bit. I said I'd probably made hundreds of presentations during my work days, but teaching the Bible class or trying to present a lesson is something quite different because of the seriousness of what we're trying to do. We do have visitors. Glad you're here, and I hate to do this, but one of the visitors today happens to be my grandson, Will. Many of you pray for him during his keeping, having chemo and so forth. He wanted me to express their appreciation for that, that you cared for him and lifted up prayers for his first few years of my life. My family lived out fairly close to where I do now. If you took a line from East Limestone High School to the state prison, you would just about pass through where I grew up. We moved when I was fairly young. But I tell you what, there are a few remembrances that I have of those early years. One of them was a good spanking I got for going across the road and picking some of Miss Belle Thomas's tame blackberries when my mother had said, "Don't you do that. There are plenty of wild ones on our side of the road." But I didn't listen. And I paid the consequences too. But more important than that, I remember sitting in my mother's lap on the back of a rubber-tired wagon being pulled by Paul Thomas's farm-all tractor as we made our way from our house about 3 miles to Capshaw to attend the gospel meeting. My mother must have thought attending was important. During my teenage years, some of you know, my brother spent about 18 months in the Crippled Children's Hospital in Birmingham. Every Sunday morning, rain, shine, or otherwise, we loaded up into the car. We made that 3 or 3.5 hour journey down the old Highway 31, not Interstate 65, it didn't exist. But we got there in time to worship with the 77th Street Church of Christ. Attendance of the worship service was always very important. I appreciate the fact that they taught me scriptures such as Hebrews chapter 10, verse 25, not forsaking ourselves, the assembling of ourselves together as a matter of some is. Or Acts chapter 20 and verse 7, it says, upon the first day of the week, the disciples came together to break bread. Paul preached it. So it was impressed upon me from a very early age that if my life was going to be acceptable to God, it would include attending the worship service on a regular basis. Now, having said all that, you may think the title of my lesson this morning, if I can get this thing to work. All right, come on. You can tell I'm a real technical genius. It's not working, guys. Come on, Andrew, help me out, buddy. Tracy, here's the genius right here. It's not me. All right, there we are. So that might seem to be a rather unusual title for a lesson. But I want you to turn your Bibles, if you would, to Jeremiah chapter 7, verses 1 through 16. And we'll be using that in our lesson this morning. It says, the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, stand in the gate of the Lord's house and proclaim there this word and say, hear the word of the Lord, all ye of Judah, that enter in at those gates to worship the Lord. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, amend your ways and your doings, and I will cause you to dwell in this place. Trust not in lying words, saying, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord are these. For if ye thoroughly amend your ways and your doings, if you thoroughly execute judgment between a man and his neighbor, if you oppress not the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, and shed not innocent blood in this place, neither walk after other gods to your hurt, then will I cause you to dwell in this place, in the land that I gave to your fathers, forever and ever. Behold, ye trust in lying words that cannot profit. Will you steal, murder, and commit adultery, and swear falsely, and burn incense unto Baal, and walk after other gods whom ye know not, and come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say, we are delivered to do all these abominations? Is this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your eyes? Behold, even I have seen it, saith the Lord. But go ye now unto my place, which was in Shiloh, where I set my name at the first, and see what I did to it for the wickedness of my people Israel. And now, because you have done all these things, saith the Lord, and I spake unto you, rising up early and speaking, but you heard not, and I called you, but you answered not. Therefore will I do unto this house, which is called by my name, wherein you trust, and unto this place which I gave to you and to your fathers, as I have done to Shiloh. And I will cast you out of my sight, as I have cast out all your brethren, even the whole seed of Ephraim. Therefore, pray not thou for this people, neither lift up cry nor prayer for them, neither make intercessions to me, for I will not. We see in these verses the prophet God having to go and talk to those people because of their sinful ways. Had nothing to do with the fact that they were attending the worship service on a regular basis. But rather, the problem was the way they were conducting their lives on a day-to-day basis. You know, they seemed to think that God would find them acceptable just as long as they went to the temple, went through the acts of worship. But if we look at the last verse, verse 16, we find God being so displeased with these people that he tells Jeremiah that it's not going to do any good for you to lift up a cry for them or pray for them or offer intercessions. He says, because I will not hear you. Now, if we go back to verse 2, and hopefully this thing worked this time. No, it didn't work. But if we go back to verse 2, I think we can conclude from some of the things that are said in these verses that just because we are attending worship service on a regular basis does not ensure that we're really worshiping. Because evidently these people were going into the temple on a regular basis because that's the place where God told Jeremiah to go. He said, stand in the gate of the Lord's house and proclaim there this word. Do we find ourselves maybe in the same situation sometimes? When we come to the house of the Lord, are we coming with the attitude that we sung about or the attitude that David expressed in Psalms chapter 122 and verse 1 when he said, I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Sometimes maybe we just show up out of habit and don't make sure now you fill out the attendance sheet, the attendance card, because certainly you don't want anybody to call you next week and ask why you were not at worship service. Jesus said in John chapter 4, and verse 24, God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. I think God's plan is pretty plain. What he expects of us when we come into his house. He expects our thoughts to be centered upon him. And I think he expects us to come here with an attitude of gladness. If we look at verse 3, I think we can see that attendance does not guarantee that our heart is necessarily right when we come into the place. Because he told these people, he made a statement, amend your ways and your doings, which indicate to me that they had a real heart problem. Their heart was not right. In Matthew chapter 15, we see Jesus having a similar discussion with the scribes and Pharisees, the religious leaders of the day. Told them that the way you're living indicates that you're not living right. In verse 7, he even calls them hypocrites. He said, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, this people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 23 tells us that we are to keep our heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. You know, our friends, our neighbors, our family, they can't judge our heart. They may think it's okay, because you know what? They see us here every time the door is open. But we know what's in our heart. And more important than that, God knows what's in our heart also. 1 John chapter 3, verses 20 and 21 says, for if our heart condemn us, God is greater than the heart and knoweth all things. Beloved, if our heart condemn us not, then have we confidence toward God. In verse 4, attendance cannot protect us from false teaching. These people apparently were trusting in the expression. Look at the words. The expression they used over and over again. The temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. They didn't seem to be too concerned, maybe, about what was actually being taught or observed when they came to the temple. They said, well, we got priests. They're in charge. So we don't have to worry too much about whether what we're doing is right or not. Can we get caught up in that type of thinking also? Just because someone stands in this pulpit or in one of those classrooms back there and teaches a particular lesson, are we just to open our mouth or our mind and just swallow it up without ever checking it out? And that's the reason I like to put these scriptures on the overhead when I try to teach a lesson. We should be like those people talked about in Acts chapter 17, verse 11. It said, those people in Berea, they were more noble than those in Thessalonica, in that they received the word with all readiness of mind, and, listen to the last part, and searched the scriptures daily whether these things were so. So, let's not be guilty of crying out, the church, the church, the church, and assume that everything is okay. Also, if you look at some of the things that were going on in verses 5 through 7, I think we can make the statement without any reservations that attendance will not make up for 6 days of wicked living. Concept here is pretty much like what we talked about in verse 3. Back there we talked about things that maybe people could not see, things that were actually in our heart. But here, he's talking about things that these people were doing openly against their fellow man and against God. They were oppressive to strangers, to the fatherless and the widows. They shed innocent blood. They walked after other gods. And even then, God said, if you just change, then I will cause you to dwell in this place, in the land that I gave your fathers forever and ever. But indications are, they weren't going to change. And I think that maybe the message to us ought to be, religion, quotation marks, is not something we put on when we come through that door, that one back there. But rather, it's something that is a way of life. A friend of mine a few years ago told me about a situation about this time of year. He was combining, his beans broke down, called the local dealer, had a mechanic to come to the field to see if he could not fix his machine because he saw rain coming pretty quick. Well, the mechanic, after being there for a few minutes, started opening his mouth, spewing out stuff that you would not believe, to the extent that my friend said, I just had to walk away. I could not even stay near where the guy was at because of his profanity. Fast forward about 2 or 3 nights from that point, my friend was at a congregation here in the county because they were having a gospel meeting. Time for the service to start. Who do you think stood up and announced the opening song? The same guy that had been in his field 2 or 3 days before. religion is not something we put on and then take off. It's something we do every day of our life. If we look at verses 8 through 11, I think we can see that attendance alone does not prove that we're forgiven. Those verses indicate that these people had been stealing, killing, committing adultery, etc. And then coming into the house of the Lord, and what was they asking? What did God say? You're coming and saying, we are delivered to do all these abominations. So I suggest that feeling safe or saved does not prove that we are saved. The Bible is the standard, not what we think or how we may feel, unless it complies with God's will. Sometimes we hear, maybe we have a radio on or flipping through the TV, and we hear people saying, you need to know Jesus. Take him as your personal Savior. Phrases, though, that don't seem to have much depth. They seem to just indicate you can say that, or maybe you can feel that. Now, if we're really founded on the knowledge of God's will and willing to obey God's will, then those expressions are good to have. 1 John chapter 2, verses 3 through 5 says, and hereby we do know that we know him, if we keep his commandments. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But who keepeth his word, in him verily is the love of God perfected. Hereby know we that are in him. Verse 13. I don't think attendance can substitute for obedience. God said he had spoken to these people, but he said they had not heard. He had called to them, but they had not answered. And I'm afraid sometime today we may fall into that same category. We may participate in religious activities, but these activities are not necessarily obedience. I think God's plan for mankind is pretty simple. And if I had one word to describe that, it would be the word obedience. Jesus gave us the test. He said in John chapter 14 and verse 15, if you love me, keep my commandments. So just going through the motions will not substitute for true obedience. If we look at the last few verses, I don't think attendance will remove the consequences of disobedience. These verses, he tells these people what he plans to do. And the sad part about it, these are people who had come to his house of worship on a regular basis. These people, they had been in their temple and put the trust in the temple. These were people who had assumed their sins were covered just because they were in the people who felt safe. But God said, I will cast you out of my sight. And as Al pointed out this morning in class, this is not a new reaction to God toward disobedience. We can trace his punishment of wickedness from the days of Adam through the end of the New Testament. We can read of his promise to continue to do so throughout eternity. So on the day of judgment, we should not be surprised at our demise if we are disobedient to his commands. He tells these people to go and look at Shiloh. Well, Shiloh was in the land of Ephraim, was the capital city of Canaan in the days of Joshua. This was where God had placed the tabernacle, and it remained there for about 400 years until it was taken away during the days of Samuel by the Philistines and carried about from place to place until it was eventually brought to the temple in Jerusalem during the days of Solomon. It was a very important place in the history of God's people. This text doesn't really tell us why it's not important too much. But Psalms chapter 78 and verse 60 describes why Shiloh lost its importance. It said, because God forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh, the tent where he had placed, that he had placed among. He says, go and look at Shiloh and see what I did to him. And he said, now I'm going to do the same thing to you. These were people that God had cared for. But now these are people who would be cast from his sight. That's a very tragic picture that's painted here in the book of I think the lesson for us today has to be, can this happen to us? And it has to be yes, if we are guilty of the same things that these people were guilty of, and we do not amend our ways and our goodness. Hopefully, we have come into the house of the Lord to do what we sung about. We hope we have come for the right purpose today. And none of these things apply to us, but possibly they do. We have to search our heart. We may have just been coming and attending service on a regular basis, and going through the acts of worship without having the proper attitude that we ought to have, and living the kind of lives that we ought to live. There may be some here today who have not even begun to live the Christian life. You have not obeyed the and of baptism, and we would ask that you think about that seriously. I would hope that you would do that even this morning and become a child of God. What I've tried to do today is stir up those of us who are considered God's people. But maybe we have found ourselves kind of drifting along. Maybe we're guilty of some of these things. We've lost our first love. We've just been going through the motion, as it were. So, if there are things of a public nature that you are aware of and you know that need correcting, then I would hope you would do that as we stand together and sing the song.